everybody. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Indirect Democracy. This week on Indirect Democracy, we'll be taking a look at the Supreme Court case involving global warming. We're going to have a new word from a new sponsor, the President's Horoscope, and of course, the What a Winnie Award. And welcome. Welcome to podcast number 15 of Indirect Democracy, found at www.indirectdemocracy.com. I am your host. My name is David, and welcome to you all. I seem to always forget this every time I do the podcast, but if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email any of those to me at david@indirectdemocracy.com. I'm trying to remember that. And of course, I bring it up because for the end of the year, I plan to have a What a Weenie for the whole year. So if you have any ideas or suggestions as to who that might be, want to send me a couple of suggestions, I'd appreciate it. That's, again, david@indirectdemocracy.com. I'd love to hear them. If you have one that you want to even include the full text of why you think why, please send it over. I'll be glad to read that. And if it's the winner, of course, give all the credit where credit is due to that person. But welcome to episode 15, and just as you know, I am a proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network. I encourage you to check out all the fine podcasts from that network, found at www.progressivepodcastnetwork.org, and join their forums over at newmediarevolutionaries.com. And I also have to thank you if you are now listening through WIRN, the World Internet Radio Network. I feel like somebody from NASCAR. I'm like naming off all the people. Yeah, I thought that the Goodyear Chevy Oreo cookie Reese's Pieces, you know, upside down cake by Dole Chevy ran really well out there. And, you know, up until I got in that accident, the ambulance had to come get me. We were doing just fine. I shouldn't tease too much NASCAR because I enjoy the auto racing. But it just for a second there, I realized that was a lot of stuff I was talking about. And speaking of new stuff that bear mentioning, let's see, Indirect Democracy now has a MySpace page. I figure everybody else has one. Why shouldn't I? But the purpose of having the MySpace page is just to allow you to go check out some more information there, check out some of the people that network through it. Well, if you want to find out more information about different people that are linked to it, have some links to Marc Maron, of course. And as well, I have put up the last two What a Weenie Awards as part of the blog, so if you find one particularly interesting, you can go there and read the full text of what I had to say for that What a Weenie Award. So I encourage you to join and come on down and just be part of it. Click me on as a friend, of course I'll add you. Just nothing pornographic, I don't need that. If you want to share ideas and comments, you can always do that, and I also, of course, encourage you to do that through newmediarevolutionaries.com. Okay, I think I'm done with the plugs. Is that right? No, wait a minute. I do have one more thing. I do want to give a shout-out to Kristen Barrick and her show Grand National Championship over at Free Radio SAIC, the college radio station for the School of the Arts Institute of Chicago. She was kind enough the other day to mention this podcast, and just want to give a shout-out. If you like good comedy, good music, and social commentary with good comments and political news, that's a good time to spend listening to that broadcast, which is on from, I believe, 8 to 9 Central Time. She's in Chicago. Look it up at freeradiosaic.org. I'll have a link at the favorite link section for indirectdemocracy.com. Whew, that's a lot of information to give out. Usually, I start with the global warming update, but there's not going to be a global warming update news tidbit because the main focus of this podcast is going to deal with Massachusetts versus the EPA, which is the Supreme Court case that was just heard last week on the 29th of November. So that'll be the biggest global warming update I can think of, and it's going to be a lot of time we're going to spend talking about that and going over some of the justices and what they had to say. Going to try not to make that boring. Please stick around. I know it's a Supreme Court case, and that can be overwhelming, but going to do my best. But I would be remiss if I did not start out with the President's Horoscope. And hold on, let me bring that up. Here it is. As always, like to give out the president's horoscope because trying to feel like we're helping him along with and during these hard times for him. And as you know, our president is a Cancer. Astrologically speaking. But from the pages of Elle magazine, here is his career horoscope for the week of December 4th through the 10th. His meter reading for this week is a 7. Ooh, that's really down. Okay, a financial matter lingers on. Until all parties can agree on how resources, power, and control can be distributed, things may remain unfinished. That's funny. That's funny if you consider everything he's going through. You sense that your opponent or competitor is dug in, and despite his or her protest, intends to outmaneuver you, probably using dogged resistance. You might be right, but it appears that you still have the advantage and more to fall back on than your alleged nemesis. Don't cave, Cancer. Protect what is precious and non-negotiable. Others may point and blame, but you understand what is at stake. My God, these people are good. And you're not about to let a bully make you sweat. That's funny. This week's touchstones are granite and cream jade. But that's a pretty good horoscope. He is having a bad time. Of course, the 109th Congress is about to go out of session, although they did confirm the nomination of Gates today, so that's pretty much a done deal. Let's see, in dealing with local news as well, and because the president has been going on the speaking tour, here's some information I found out about a recent speaking thing he did on Fox News. See, I'm not the type of person who likes to listen to Fox News, so I do tune in to Stephanie Miller to hear what she has to say about what's happening on Fox News, and couldn't get over this exchange from Brit Hume on Fox News after his interview with President Bush. And here's a clip.
His spirits are good. His atmosphere is his attitude is confident.
Sure.
He seems comfortable. He seems to enjoy the work. He said the burden of this office is not heavy. It's light. He's fine. He's in good spirits. Now, look, Neil, you and I have been around a long time, and you can smell this embattled, troubled quality on a politician at 100 yards. It's not there.
The sounds you heard in the background were Stephanie Miller and her crew giggling to, of course, Brit Hume's remarks, because during this time of amazing political strife, Brit Hume's coming across as though the president's having the easiest time. Now, what Stephanie doesn't have that I do have is the remainder of that audio footage, and here it is.
Now, what you have to understand is that the president's burden is light because he's a strong man, imposing. You know, he works out, and to be honest with you, I want to be there with him when he works out. I want to spa with him. I want to be there to be his lookout guy. I want to be his milkmaid and him my friendly goat herder. When is he going to return my phone calls? I won't have him ignore me.
Now, about that time, obviously, they cut off the audio transcript. But isn't it amazing how in love the people at Fox News are with this administration? And now, here's an ad from the Progressive Podcast Network.
I think George W. Bush is the worst president we've ever had.
I think the Republicans in the U.S. are out of control and need to be stopped.
I think the fact that the Bush administration is hiding global warming from the public is outrageous.
Hi, this is Shelley, and that's a taste of my podcast called Citizen Against Lies.
I welcome you to tune in each week and find commentary that you won't find anywhere else.
The liberal media is a myth.
The last three elections were stolen by Republicans from American voters.
If you don't agree, tell me why.
Citizen Against Lies. Subscribe through iTunes.
Well, as the Iraq Study Group report is out, I don't have all the full facts on that information to go into that for this week. And depending on how overexposed I think that news story gets, I may or may not have it be a topic for next week. But I am going to give that a full read and get an idea of what it says, because 79 recommendations is a huge amount of information to go out. And as I said before, no matter what the recommendations are, the full set of recommendations, this is going to be a very controversial news piece and topic and political point of conversation for quite a while. But I will give it some time to read, and if there's anything that isn't mentioned within the news that I find particularly interesting, of course I'll be sure to share it with you.
Shouting all about love while they treat you like a dog.
Let's see, I'm going to do another tribute this week, and what you just heard was George Harrison beginning part of that tribute, because this Friday is December 8th, and December 8th marks a sad anniversary for music lovers and people who embrace peace, love, and understanding as an ultimate goal. For on December 8th, 1980, John Lennon was murdered in New York City. Now, I was only 10 when he died, but like many people, the music of the Beatles and his solo work play a significant role in our hearts and souls for its simplicity, its beauty, and its message of revolution through peace. Strange bedfellows, I know, but I think they're good ones. The first time I really remember John Lennon was in 1980, when I discovered a copy of an LP of Revolver in my family's cabinet that held all of our albums. I must have listened to Revolver on a continuous loop, but when John Lennon died, I barely understood his significance. It was only later as a teenager I understood what we all lost. The constant beauty of songs like Imagine resonate not just as one man's message, but as the anthem of a generation to imagine who we simply want to be. One people at peace. Give Peace a Chance is not a song, it's a chant. A sometimes noisy, messy, and constant plea or even a prayer to the powers that be and the power in all of us to answer one call for peace. You know, there are many other songs. Jealous Boy, Woman, Nobody Told Me, Working Class Hero, Instant Karma, and oh my goodness, too many countless Beatles songs. But the history and music he gave us is eternal. Strangely, although I owned at some point all his solo works in cassette tape format, which is pretty much moot today, I did love Double Fantasy because of Watching the Wheels. In particular, this part of the track.
People asking questions, lost in confusion. Well, I tell them there's no problem, only solutions. Well, they shake their heads and they look at me as if I've lost my mind. I tell them there's no hurry, I'm just sitting here doing time. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the merry-go-round. I just have to let it go.
That was always my favorite part because that message was simple. There are no problems, only solutions. To John Lennon, may he rest in peace, and may his true messages never rest, but live in all of us. Now, usually the first thing that occurs in any episode of Indirect Democracy is the global warming update, which I usually bring up a news story or event dealing with the subject of global warming every week because I feel that no one threat affects our planet in so great a manner. Now, I'm not dismissing wars, poverty, drought, or all the other ills that plague our world. But I have to own up and admit, I'm a convert to this belief that global warming is a threat to all of us, and I say it as a recent convert, at least within the past 6 months. What I find disturbing about it all is that it's subtle. We don't see the threat. You know, it's like Patrick Swayze in Ghost. If he had recognized Carl for the scum that he was, then maybe he's alive making bad pottery with Molly and Oda May still struggling to find her gift. But I realize that I have now veered off topic. In Los Angeles this month, or last month, the month of November, it reached temperatures of 90 plus degrees. The Alps in Europe currently have little or no snow on them. Marine life that has never existed off the New England coast is now making its home there, and the polar ice caps, our reflective mirror that deflects the heat of the sun, is melting. All of these events are happening now. Our world is changing. The predicted changes as chronicled in podcast number 1 of Indirect Democracy and as fully detailed in the movie An Inconvenient Truth, which is now on DVD And no, I don't work for Al Gore. But it's a gift for your friends and family. I still don't work for him. We'll bring about unimagined changes to our world that will only exacerbate the very wars, drought, poverty, and plagues that exist on this fragile little blue ball we call home. An important global warming update happened last week as our Supreme Court heard the case of Massachusetts versus EPA. Now, I'm going to explain the parameters of the case, what questions were posed, why the legal questions have such importance, and read to you some of the passages from the transcripts, as there wasn't an audio transcript I could find. Massachusetts versus EPA involves a case by 12 of the United States, including Massachusetts and California, against the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, to require the EPA to find that carbon dioxide gases, or CO2, and the other noxious gases that make up the greenhouse gases that contribute to global warming are a qualified air pollutant and should be regulated as such by the EPA in the emissions of all new cars and trucks. The EPA under this administration has refused to find that greenhouse gases are an air pollutant. So, the state sued to enforce the portions of the Clean Air Act that the EPA regulates. The two main questions that were argued before the court were, 1, do the states have standing? And 2, does the EPA have to regulate greenhouse gases as an air pollutant under Section 1202 of the Clean Air Act? The biggest part of the argument that the court heard dealt with standing. Now, I'm pretty sure you're wondering what is standing, and if you have a basic legal understanding of it, you already know. But in case you don't, and just take this for what it is, standing requires that a plaintiff is suffering, has suffered, or is about to suffer an imminent harm for which the court can offer redress of that injury. Why is that important? I'm pretty sure you're thinking to yourself. Simply put, without standing, you have no case. A party has to show that there is a causal connection between the injury suffered and the defendant, and that the injury is to them, and that the court can find some remedy, be it through money or some kind of injunction, to relieve the injured party and put them in a place they were before the injury ever happened. You know, here's an example. Let's say a loved one of yours, maybe your brother or sister, gets into a car accident, and they're not at fault. Your sibling was alone in the car, and the car they own is damaged. So, because of the negligent driving by the other party, you, and not your sibling, decide to sue them. You weren't in the car, you don't own the car. You may love your sibling, but all the love in the world does not equal that you suffered any injury that the court can fix by way of damages. So standing requires that the injured party sue because the court can help your injured brother, but they can't help you. And then there's the next issue, which is whether or not the EPA has the authority to regulate the emissions of new cars and trucks for greenhouse gases as an air pollutant that endangers public health and safety. Fortunately, the question that the court does not have to answer, much to their delight, is whether or not to believe in the science of climate change. The questions they have to answer is whether the states had standing in the first place, and if the EPA was wrong in saying it had no authority to regulate greenhouse gases as an air pollutant. Now, the best way I could think of to discuss this case was to share with you the highlights of each of the justices and the answers of Mr. Mielke, who represented the states, and Mr. Gehr, who represented the government. Now, right about now, I hope this is not boring you, so please stick with me because this will be interesting. I hope that you'll enjoy, and just please stick around, because here are some of those highlights, and I will mention the judge's name and the attorney that responded. On the issue of standing, here were some remarks by Justice Scalia. I thought that standing requires imminent harm. If you haven't been harmed already, you have to show that the harm is imminent. Is this harm imminent? And here's the response from Mr. Mielke. It is, Your Honor. We have shown that the sea levels are already occurring from the current amounts of greenhouse gases in the air, and that means it is only going to get worse as the... Then there's a... Scalia interrupts, when? I mean, when is the predicted cataclysm? Mielke's response, Your Honor, it's not so much as a cataclysm as an ongoing harm. The harm does not suddenly spring up in the year 2100. It plays out continuously over time. Then Scalia responds back, well, there's a lot of conjecture about whether, Well, I gather there's something of a consensus on warming, but not a consensus on how much of that is attributable to human activity. And I gather that, what is it, something like 7% of the total carbon dioxide emissions are attributable to automobiles in the United States? Milky's response, it's actually about 6%, Your Honor. Here's a question from Justice Kennedy regarding standing. At the outset, you made this, some of this perhaps, reassuring statement that we need not decide about global warming in this case. But don't we have to do that in order to decide standing argument? Because there's no injury if there's not global warming. Or can you show standing simply because there is a likelihood that the perceived would show that there is an injury? Milky's response, Your Honor, especially in this case where none of our affidavits were challenged, I don't think that the court needs to go there ultimately on the merits because we showed through our uncontested affidavits that these harms will occur. But there was no evidence put into the contrary, and I would add that the reports on which EPA itself relies conclude that climate change is occurring. Here's a portion from Justice Alito to Mr. Milky regarding standing. If you look ahead, I don't know how far imminence allows you to look ahead, but let's say we're looking at 5 or 10 years. What particularized harm does the record show that Massachusetts will or faces an imminent threat of suffering that can be traceable to the reductions that you want to produce through these regulations? Milky's response, well, Your Honor, if I can deal with the traceability part of that question first, traceability is easy to show here because the extent of our harm is caused by the overall amount of the gases in the air, and being focused on the 20% of all U.S. sources, or 6% of the cars, that's still a sizable portion of the problem, so we know that 6 or 20% is there. Alito's response, 6% is the total emissions, the total contribution from motor vehicles in the United States, right? Milky's response, to the global carbon dioxide emission. Alito, to the global, and so the reduction that you could achieve under the best of circumstances with these regulations would be a small portion of that, would it not? Milky's response, it would be. We have shown in the record it would be about a 2.5% over time it takes to turn the fleet over, but it's important that given the nature of the harms, even small reductions can be significant. For example, if we're able to save only a small fraction of the hundreds of millions of dollars that Massachusetts park agencies are projected to lose, that reduction itself is significant. Justice Thomas had this to ask about standing. Here's Scalia again on standing, to Milky. That seems to be a much more immediate kind of damage, yet that's been referred to as really the far margin of our standing cases. You're talking not about their being affected by ambient air, but being affected by a stratospheric effect, which then has another consequence that you allege. Milky, Your Honor, once these are emitted, the law of physics take over. So our harm is imminent in the sense that lighting a fuse on a bomb is imminent harm. This is from Justice Stevens regarding standing. Is there uncertainty on the basic proposition that these greenhouse gases contribute to global warming? And this is from Mr. Gare, for the government. Your Honor, the report says that it is likely that there is a connection, but that it cannot unequivocally be established. I think that if I could use that to go back to the standing question, Your Honor, which is the fundamental question of whether they've showed not just a connection between greenhouse gas emissions in toto and the phenomena of global climate change, but the particular cases of greenhouse emissions at issue in the case. 6% of global greenhouse emissions at most. That assumes you put all U.S. vehicles off the road or that they are all zero-emission cars. This is from Justice Breyer to Mr. Gare from the government regarding standing. Suppose it is not greenhouse gas. Suppose it was Agent Orange. Suppose there are cars coming down the street and it sprays out Agent Orange and I come into court and I say, you know, I think that Agent Orange is going to kill me with cancer. And the reply is, well, we have some scientists in here who say you have a chance of dying of cancer from Agent Orange, and it's only 1 in 30, maybe 1 in 50, maybe 1 in 1,000, maybe 1 in 10,000, and therefore you have no standing to require the EPA to regulate this pollutant. Agent Orange, which is in a green cloud over all the city. Now, would you say that that person who's made that claim has no standing? Mr. Gare, Your Honor, I think that is a fundamentally different case for the simple reason that global climate change is a global phenomenon. Kennedy to Mr. Gare. Your problem, I think, you take the position, the proposition, that the greater the harm, the greater the risk, the smaller the probability, has to be before it is reasonable to act and necessary to act. Gare's response, Your Honor, this court's standing cases make clear that you have to show that granting the relief requested is likely to redress the alleged harms. Justice Thomas interjected with this. Here's Justice Souter on standing. They say it is likely to do so, even though we cannot give you a point-for-point percentage correlation between reduction of gas and coastline loss. You're saying it seems that they somehow have got to pinpoint this mathematically. Mr. Gare, I don't. We're not saying that. Souter, before there is redressability. Mr. Gare, we're not saying that, Your Honor. We're saying that they certainly have to do more than they have done here, and they're granting their standing. Souter, tell me what it is they need. Be more specific about what they need to do. Gare, well, I'll be more specific. And if I could just point out to what they grounded their case on here, they grounded their case on here in declarations on the notion if the United States regulates greenhouse gas emissions of vehicles, then other countries will follow suit with respect to emissions of vehicles. Justice Breyer on standing to Mr. Gare. So they couldn't have gone in and asked for ozone regulations because that requires other countries. Or what about dumping heavy metals in the sea and as the sea gets polluted because of what other countries do? But EPA tried to regulate that. Acid rain, they tried to regulate. You're saying there is no standing to ask for any of that? Mr. Gare. Well, first of all, Congress has specifically addressed two of the areas that you mentioned, Your Honor. We're not saying that categorically. Chief Justice Roberts then intervenes. Just because there's no standing to challenge an agency's decision doesn't mean the agency can't regulate that particular area, right? Mr. Gare, that's exactly right, Your Honor. That's exactly right. I found that portion interesting because it appears that Roberts actually gave Gare the answer. Stevens on standing to Gare. As I understand the government's position, you're not merely questioning standing, but you also take the position you do not have the authority to do what the plaintiff asks you to do. Is that correct? That's true, Your Honor. Moving to the merits, that's true. And now here are portions from the text regarding whether or not the EPA has authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. From Chief Justice Roberts to Mr. Mielke. Let's say the first day this law is passed, there are a lot of air pollutants that come out of motor vehicles. I mean, is EPA immediately in violation of this statute if they don't issue emissions regulations for every one of those air pollutants on day one? Mr. Mielke. No, Your Honor. EPA has a lot of room to move based both on the endangerment standard itself and on background principles of administrative law. Scalia regarding authority. Is it an air pollutant that endangers health? I think it has to endanger health by reason of polluting the air, and this does not endanger health by reason of polluting the air at all. Mr. Mielke, Your Honor, respectfully, I disagree, and there is nothing in the Act that actually requires the harm to occur in the ambient air. In fact, some of the harm here does occur there. Scalia, well, it talks about air pollution all the time. That's what the thing is about air pollution. It's not about global warming. It's not about the troposphere. Your Honor, we are not saying, first of all, that global warming is air pollution any more than we are saying that asthma is air pollution. They're both effects. I would point to the example of acid rain where the pollutant, sulfur dioxide. The problem is it causes harm after it leaves the air, after it gets washed out. Air pollutants do not need to cause harm in the ambient air. Your Honor, I would add that our interpretation satisfied common sense because while EPA has plenary authority over substances that motor vehicles emit, those substances are regulated only if EPA determines that they cause endangerment. By defining the term air pollutant comprehensively, Congress has not prejudged what may cause endangerment, but it has allowed other pollutants to be regulated as their harms become appreciated. It is EPA's interpretation that fails the common sense test. They have suggested that the term air pollutant agent creates an independent test so important that it may prevent some harmful compounds from being regulated. Then Justice Thomas said, Ginsburg to Gare regarding authority. Mr. Gare, doesn't the EPA's decision on the first we don't have any authority, doesn't that infect its subsequent decision? Well, even if we did, we wouldn't exercise it. But they've already decided they don't have authority. Gare's response, Your Honor, I don't think that it does. In the sense, I think EPA made it clear in its decisional document that it considered as an alternative matter that if it, even assuming it did have authority, that it wouldn't be appropriate to exercise it at this time. Steven Stiger, regarding authority. I find it interesting that the scientists who worked on that report said there were a good many omissions that would have indicated that there wasn't nearly the uncertainty that the agency described. Gare, Your Honor, if you're referring to the amicus brief, there are, assuming there are amicus briefs on the other side, the balloonist amicus brief, I think it is fair for the court to look at the document that the agency had before it, that the document produced by the National Research Council, that's the research arm of the National Academy of Sciences, and it's one of the gold standards of research. Stevens' response. But in their selective quotations, they left out parts that indicated there was far less uncertainty than the agency purported to find. From Justice Souter regarding authority. But why did they have to show a precise correlation as opposed simply to establishing what I think is not really contested, that there is a correlation between greenhouse gases and the kind of loss they're talking about? And is it reasonable to suppose that some reduction in the gases will result in some reduction in future loss? Why is that insufficient? Justice Souter, one fundamental reason is that we don't know what the rest of the world is going to do, whether or not. Souter, let's assume the rest. Let's assume that the rest of the world does nothing. I don't think that's a very reasonable assumption, but let's make that assumption. So that the only thing we're talking about is 6%. Now this is a little bit of standing, but it does get more into authority. They don't have to show, I'm skipping a little bit here. They don't have to show that it will stop global warming. Their point is that it will reduce the degree of global warming and likely reduce the degree of loss. What's wrong with that? Justice Souter, their burden is to show that if the court grants their requested relief, it will redress their injuries. Souter, not redress their injury in the sense that it will prevent any global warming or stop global warming and stop coastal erosion. Their argument is a different one. It will reduce the degree of global warming and reduce the degree of coastal loss. That's their argument, not all or nothing, but a part. That's what they're trying to show. Mr. Gare, and that's fine, Justice Souter, I grant you that, but these still have to show that there is reason that it is likely to believe that the reduction in that tiny fraction of United States emissions, putting aside the 99% or the 95% in the rest of the world and what they do, and that the evidence shows that greenhouse gas emissions in those countries are increasing, they have to show the regulation of that tiny fraction would have an effect on their alleged injuries, not to completely redress them. Your Honor, we don't say that. Souter, don't they have to show that it's reasonable to suppose it will have an effect? Gare, they have to show that it's likely, Your Honor, and they haven't even tried to make that showing. Souter, but isn't it intuitively reasonable to suppose that with some reduction of greenhouse gases, there will be some reduction of the ensuing damage or the ensuing climate change, which causes the damage? Isn't that fair? Gare, I don't think that is fair, Your Honor. I don't want to pretend to be an expert on global climate change, but the one thing I can say is from the materials I looked at that this is an extraordinarily complex area of science. Scalia to Gare regarding authority. You concede that it's an air pollutant that affects health. Gare, no, what the agency found, Your Honor, because global climate change is not air pollution within the meaning of the statute, which is to say that Congress did not authorize it to regulate it as air pollution. Scalia, then why isn't air pollution within the meaning of the statute, although whatever it is that causes acid rain is? Gare, I think, Your Honor, that the key to the agency was that Congress did not give it regulatory authority over this, and I think on the question of whether or not greenhouse gas emissions qualify, Scalia, but you can't give me any text in the statute itself. It isn't the phrase air pollution or any other phrase. Gare, the agency pointed to the term air pollution agent in the statute and concluded that because global climate change was not air pollution that Congress intended to address. Scalia, and that gets us back to acid rain. Gare, and with respect to acid rain, it's a good example insofar as Congress has enacted a whole separate title of the Clean Air Act to address acid rain. Scalia, so that's the position you're taking, that it is within the general term? Gare, I think it's largely the position that the agency took, Your Honor, insofar as it reasoned that, look, we looked at everything. We conclude that Congress doesn't intend us to regulate global climate change as air pollution, and so therefore we're not going to say that greenhouse gases are air pollution agents. Finally, Justice Thomas interjected with this point. Ginsburg regarding authority. The agency's position, not too long ago, was that they did have the authority. Mr. Gare, well, Justice Ginsburg, it was 30 years before the agency reached the conclusion in 1998 that carbon dioxide was an air pollutant, and again, even when it reached that conclusion, it made clear that it didn't think that the agency would exercise its authority to regulate it. Ginsburg, that's a different question. Did it have the authority to deal with this issue? Gare's response, Congress did not intend to hide elephants in mouse holes. Here we are talking about an issue of the magnitude of regulating global climate change and greenhouse gas emissions, which are fundamentally an important part of the nation's economy. Nearly 85% of the economy is a direct or indirect source of greenhouse gas emissions. And finally, Alito regarding authority to Mr. Mielke. If the EPA concedes that regulating an air pollutant would endanger public health and welfare, can it decline to regulate? Mielke, not under Section 202, Your Honor. Alito, it has to regulate even if it concludes that the regulation would make things worse. Mielke, would make things worse? Alito, yes. Mielke, I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. No, Your Honor. If they thought there would be more endangerment that way, they would not have to regulate. Alito, then why can't they? What is wrong with their view that the United States to proceed unilaterally would make things worse, and therefore they're going to decline to regular for that reason? And that's how it's read, so I imagine he meant to say regulate. Mielke, Your Honor, first of all, I don't believe they actually said that, and there is nothing in the statute that even hints that they can take foreign policy considerations into account. To the contrary, the statute is very specific in other sections about when they're supposed to look at foreign emissions. Alito, isn't the definition of public welfare extremely broad? Mielke, Your Honor, it is certainly extremely broad, and it does include climate. The standing issue is going to be the largest issue that the court's going to deal with, and is going to play a very large role. And as you heard, it's a very complex issue dealing with harm. I think that's really where the case is going to come down to in its final decision. And as to standing, one thing I found particularly distressing while reading the responses from Mielke, who represented the states, is that he constantly went back and forth to the concept of larger global impact and the erosion of the coastline. Now, there's nothing wrong with focusing on that, but wouldn't have been a stronger argument to deal with local things that are occurring to the state of Massachusetts as a better argument? And as I mentioned before, there are news stories out there that the New England coast is starting to get wildlife and marine life off of its shores that it's never seen before because of the effects of climate change. And isn't that an interesting thing to talk about? Isn't it interesting to also talk about effects on business that are occurring now, heat wave patterns that are occurring now, the stress on gas, natural gas and electricity because of air conditioning or heating that is occurring now and can be regulated or attributed to global warming? So the constant thing of going back and forth to, you know, eroding coastlines because of the rising sea levels, while shocking, of course, I don't think really gave the concept of imminent harm, so I'm a little bit worried for that argument. Towards the end, you heard a lot of discussion about the authority and the talking about whether or not by doing this would it make an economic impact, and that is something very important to discuss, because in granting an injunction, one thing that courts always look to is the balancing of the hardships. They will balance what is the one person's injury against the hardship it'll have on the defendant. And the obvious one that has to be put in is not just what the EPA will have to do, but how it will affect, unfortunately, this country's economy. They could look to what would occur overseas, but they will look to how it will affect our economy. And that is just a natural part of the law when it comes to injunctions. So just a little bit of side tip as to what to look to. Alito already discussing whether or not this can be put into effect leads to the concepts and the idea that he's probably not going to support this overall. But we'll find out in late June or July when this decision is finally released to the public. And of course, any updates that come in at that time, even though it's far away in time, I will be sure to give to you. And now, here's an ad from the Progressive Podcast Network.
The anti-Bush press makes terrorist
their interests are not your interests. Their truth is not your truth. The corporations have their media.
Now we have ours.
The Progressive Podcast Network. Now we are the media. Listen to your media. Take your country back. Go to progressivepodcastnetwork.org. The Progressive Podcast Network. progressivepodcastnetwork.org.
Well, as always, we have a new sponsor, and here is that ad from this new sponsor. We've been there through cold and flu season. We've been there through allergies. We've been there through sad movies. We've been there for you when you've laughed yourself to tears. We've been there through the joys and the pain. We've even been there when you publicly realized who the better son was.
True measure of a man is how you handle victory and also defeat. So in 94, Floridians chose to rehire the governor. But they took note of his defeated opponent, who showed not merely with words, but by his actions, what decency and
a father's pride, and he said his son has served with honor as governor of Florida.
Kleenex. We've always been there for you. Well, as always, we end off every podcast with the What a Winnie Award. And this week's What a Winnie Award goes to the TSA. And it's not for the no-fly list as discussed a couple of weeks ago. Strangely, this is not even for the rating score that was just released to the news. In case you're not aware what that is, it's a program that measures how safe we are as individuals to travel based on our travel patterns. And they've been keeping these scores for a while, and it's not even made available for the public to see or scrutinize or question its effectiveness should a problem occur with someone's score. No, that is a problem, and it does make me wonder about my privacy concerns in a format I can't question. No, my gravest concern is for the newest X-ray technology that can do a full body scan and produce an image of my body in ghost format for the whole world, or at least the TSA, to see. Now, I say the whole world because given the right angle or roving eye, I mean, how do I know for sure that somebody possibly couldn't see a 3D composite of my naked body? You know, I have enough self-esteem issues as a ghost. You know, hell, I was raised in a Latino Catholic home. Guilt is naturally compounded in that atmosphere. Hell, sex was dirty as a rule. And to add to it, when I went to my aunt's home, she had some of the most shockingly obvious examples of Jesus Christ on the cross, including a painting of the man's face with blood and sweat cascading down his face, to mentally ingrain his suffering for our sins and fill you with guilt and doubt about everything. A dirty thought, not in that house, and to this day I still feel the smallest tinges of that. So add to that mental baggage the extra baggage of the pudge that is building in my belly and now the whole world, including the possibility of some TSA agent with low-grade professionalism and no laugh filter and a print button is going to see a ghost-like image of my naked body, including my secondary and tertiaries. You know, I don't need this. I have enough pressure in traveling as it is. Pack everything accordingly, but don't lock my suitcase. Show up 2 to 4 hours in advance. Be on a plane for 3 to 5 hours, and if I smell or feel icky, no mouthwash, no toothpaste or cologne, or only the teeniest amounts to feel human again after sitting in coach next to the sweaty guy wearing a hat that says nobody's ugly after a six-pack. Oh, and since I can't bring electronic equipment on board, I think, I can't put on my iPod to ignore the screaming child 2 rows back. Sadly, all those things happen to me when flying. Plus, the government is measuring my worth as a traveler, or possibly could put me on that list because of my public criticism of the no-fly list, that now I have to worry that before they let me on the plane, they might put me in a room to question who I am before I travel because they're sadistic pranksters. Oh, and then to add on to the holiday stress of traveling, you're telling me that they get to see my naked body? Come on, I have enough on my mind. Stop it. Stop this program, which only adds to my natural sense of worry, guilt, and self-esteem issues as I grow older. And if you have to do so, I want a personalized machine that makes me thinner and enhances certain areas. So, for adding to the overall pressure I feel as an airline traveler, the TSA earns this week's What a Weenie Award. Well, that'll be it for this week's edition of Indirect Democracy. Let's see, the music clips you heard from before were George Harrison, All Those Years Ago, and John Lennon's Watching the Wheels from the album Double Fantasy. Of course, I'd like to thank you all if you found this podcast via the Progressive Podcast Network, or if you are listening right now through WIRN, the World Internet Radio Network, thank you for listening. As always, I have to thank Matt Bloodwell and the guys at Megaphone for allowing me to use their song, Not Your Enemy, from the album For Crying Out Loud. You can find their music through www.megaphonemusic.net or their MySpace page at www.myspace.com/megaphone. You can also purchase their album through iTunes, and if you are having trouble finding those links, you can find them through the homepage for Indirect Democracy at indirectdemocracy.com. Oh, just in case, I'll let you know, for the homepage of indirectdemocracy.com, I am making small changes, including adding some Marc Maron clips for your enjoyment, and I do encourage you to come on down and see those. Go to the MySpace page and check out the blog information I put up there for the What a Weenie Awards. And also, as a reminder, if you have any suggestions for who should be the What a Weenie for this year, please send them to david@indirectdemocracy.com. Once again, I thank you for listening. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. I will see you next week. Bye for now. You know, for a guy who has nothing to say, Justice Thomas is loud.